the hunt. The same thought had come into the mind of Juno, who approached Venus, her arms stretched wide with delight. "Why, this is perfect," she said. "Have you seen how on fire with love for Aeneas Dido is? A fine pair they make. Imagine them ruling together as king and queen. That would suit your plans for your beloved Carthage," said Venus. "But do you think our father Jove would countenance all that power in just one place?" "Let me work on Jupiter," said Juno. "Tomorrow Dido is planning to take Aeneas and his men on a hunt in the woods. I shall send a rainstorm that will drive them both into a cave where she can seal her love. What a marriage! Your son ruling with Dido over the greatest empire the world has seen. Perfect for both of us." Venus smiled assent, but was not fooled for a moment. "Anything to prevent my Aeneas from founding a great city in Italy, a city that it is foretold will one day destroy your beloved Carthage." Juno smiled sweetly in return. "I only want what is best for them both." The next morning, all fell out as Juno intended. Dido led the pack with Aeneas as guest of honour by her side, his son Ascanius bouncing excitedly in the saddle close behind. Before long, the sky filled with dark clouds. Ascanius's horse bolted, and rain and hail crashed down on the hunting party as thunder boomed all around. Dido remembered a cave, and soon she and Aeneas were alone there together. With the storm howling outside, he found enough dry wood inside to build a small fire. Their soaking clothes needed to be dried. The firelight flickered over their naked skin. When they emerged from the cave, clothes dried, the sun was shining. Nymphs were singing in the hills. They sang an epithalamium whose verses told the world that Dido and Aeneas were now one. Months passed. One afternoon, as Aeneas was working on the ramparts of the city, a shining young man appeared before him. The low-brimmed helmet, the staff, the sandals, the impertinent smile, there could be no doubting who this stranger was. Aeneas dropped to his knees. "Well might you bow to me in shame, Aeneas," said the god Mercury, frowning primly. "My father Jupiter is most displeased with you, most displeased. Look at you, raising the foundations of your wife's city, languishing here in Libya when you should be obeying the destiny that you know is yours. Your duty is to your son and his line. And it lies in Italy, not here." A blown kiss, a wave, and Mercury was gone. Few, if any, heroes in all Greek or Roman mythology were quite as loyal and well-behaved as Aeneas. But the piety that defined him meant that any loyalty to his people was always capped by his rigid obedience to divine will. It is hard for us irreligious types to think much of a man who would betray his lover to please a deity. The romantic hero to us is one who defies divine will. Just as we cannot readily admire the biblical Abraham for being so ready to stick a knife into his own son at the insistence of his God, so we do not admire Aeneas for now laying secret plans to sail away from Dido under cover of night, while knowing that her love for him was so overwhelming that such a betrayal would likely kill her. But that is what Aeneas set out to do. He summoned his trusted lieutenants, Nestius, Segestus, and Serestus, telling them to prepare the fleet in absolute secrecy. Secrets were as hard to keep then as they are now, and it was not long before Dido heard of Aeneas's plans. She ran to him, weeping. "You cannot be the son of the goddess of love," she cried. "Your father must have been some granite mountain, and your mother a tigress." "Dido, Dido, I do what I do because the oracles of Apollo and the prophecies of the very gods themselves ordain it. If you, a Tyrian, can build a kingdom far away in Carthage, then I, a Trojan, can build one in Italy. We are all the children of the gods, one way or another, and must do their bidding." "No! We are children of Prometheus, and we have our own fire and will." With those words, which meant so much more than Aeneas could have guessed, she swept away. As Aeneas and his men felled timber to patch and renew their ships, so, in an open courtyard of her palace, Dido and her sister Anna built a great wooden pyre. As the Trojan fleet left the harbour of Carthage, a column of smoke rose up behind them. Running to the stern of his ship, Aeneas looked back to witness a terrible but magnificent sight. The flames rising about her, Dido berated the gods for not finishing off Troy and its people in their entirety. In her final burning agony, she cursed Aeneas and his line, proclaiming eternal enmity between Carthage and the civilization that Aeneas so piously claimed it was his destiny to build, his Latium, his Italy, his Rome.